Hi, I'm Greg Schaefer, and welcome to the Virtual CISO Moment. Darren Rich joins us today. He has been in the IT and information security industry for 35 years with AT&T for about 20 and works currently in the CSO office there. He also has been volunteering as a CISO for some time now for a nonprofit, helping them with HIPAA compliance and some other stuff. Darren, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, Greg. Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
I didn't trip over that intro too bad. I thought it was going to be a little bit worse, actually.
You did a great job.
I appreciate it. It's a good thing that I have a good day job, though, I have to say. Listen, I appreciate you coming on. Would love to hear your information security and cybersecurity journey, where and why you got started in this wonderful world of cyber, and just generally what it is that you're doing today.
Well, if we kind of go back a few years, 30 plus years, how I actually got into cyber was I was actually a plumber, if you can believe that. When I got out of school, I spent about 5 years doing different things in construction, some odd jobs, and got a call one day from the school system here locally and said, hey, we have a job in the MIS department for records management. So I said, well, I don't know if I want to do this or not. You know, I'm a tough guy and out in the field. And so I was out digging ditches in the 100 degree weather here in Florida and decided, you know what, I probably should go work in the air conditioning. So that's how I started. And once I got into the MIS department, I discovered personal development, started reading John Maxwell books and found a mentor. And so that kind of started my journey of personal development and really trying to figure out how do I maximize my time here. And one thing I think is really important is I discovered the power of mentorship. And there was this little guy named Ron Townsend, Dr. Ron Townsend. He was an adjunct professor, executive director of technology for the school system. And I thought I should go get him as a mentor. And he told me about this thing. And I just assumed he would say, you need to go back to college, get your degree. And when I got there with him, he said, hey, there's this thing called the World Wide Web. And I worked on ARPANET when I was in college. And when this thing launches in a couple of years, if you understand computer networking, you will have a career for life. And so my wife and I, we did not have the money to pay for it. I was working at the school system. I was probably making $6 an hour, $7 an hour at the time, and didn't really have the money. So we decided, hey, let's make the investment. I went and got certified as a Novell engineer, a CNE, which a lot of people might not even know what that is in today's world. And so that's how
I was a CNE.
Well, that's good. That's good. I think we're in a lot of parallels there. Mm-hmm. And so that's how I started. And I started in the school system. You know, they allowed me to build some lands and things like that, but within the school system. And then once I got certified, I ended up, you know, leaving the school system after 5 years. And I went to work for an IBM reseller as a systems engineer and designing school networks. And then evolved from there into a role as a network administrator, and then eventually in charge of communications, global communications for a Fortune 500 company back at the time in the mid to late 90s. And then I ended up, you know, with AT&T in the year 2000. So, it was quite a journey, and there are a lot of, you know, things that we could talk about for hours of things that happened during that journey. But, you know, the power of mentorship and the people that helped me along the way just really changed the trajectory of my life. And I ended up here today and obviously in the cyber type roles.
I think it's interesting, you know, getting back to the beginning, I always like to draw parallels between like previous careers and future careers and in plumbing, or I think the union politically correct way of saying that would be pipe fitters. Is that correct?
I believe that's right.
So I didn't start out in this industry either. I was mechanical engineering and working in a production factory on their safety program, their lockout tagout. And I was admonished not to call them plumbers, they're pipe fitters. But anyway, when you're talking about what do you do there? You're facilitating the movement of liquid. What do you do in networking? You're facilitating the movement of data. There are a lot of parallels involved there. And at some point in time, though, when you as starting as a network person in Novell, I was Novell CNE 311, I think. I don't remember the exact numbers. That sounds about right. Or 312, something like that. But at some point in time, you probably realized that you were focusing more on not making that flow go through unobstructed, and the flow needed to have some checks first, the security part. When did that happen for you?
Well, it wasn't until you know, Windows for Workgroups came out, and we started to work a little bit more, you know, with individual systems, because, you know, Novell, remember, it took 28 diskettes to actually install the operating system. So there's...
And so, I mean, how did we survive? We walked uphill to school 3 miles in the snow both ways. You know, it's like, it was horrible. Uh-oh, did I lose you? Oh, I've never had this happen
before. Yeah, so I think it was the net trend. Whoa, okay. You see me now?
Yeah, we're back. Okay, well, that's good. A little internet glitch there on our side, but go ahead.
Somebody's launched a DDoS attack against this session.
They've stopped up our plumbing.
Yeah, exactly. We just had a passing storm here in Florida, so that could be some
influence. We'll blame it on that.
Yes. Yeah, so it, you know, making that transition to Windows for Workgroups and moving from SPX to NetBIOS, you know, from a protocol perspective and understanding, I started to see a little bit more around social engineering and things like that even happening back then. People stealing passwords, people writing passwords, you know, on their desk and leaving it on their computers. Even started back in those days. So. Yeah, I've seen the progression. Social engineering really hasn't changed over the years, and how we protect ourselves, and that seems to be a prevalent problem, especially in small business. If you walk around a small business, a lot of times you can find passwords and things. But I know I got off on a tangent there a little bit, but the lessons that I learned at the point you're making about plumbing, the resourcefulness as well, because you know, thinking about. You know, as technology progressed and how resourceful you had to be, you didn't always have everything you needed. So you had to be resourceful. And I know in plumbing, there would be a lot of times, and I only did it for 2 or 3 years, but you wouldn't have everything you needed to complete a job. So you'd have to go out to your truck and look around and try to find pieces and parts to make things work. And so I learned those skill sets, resourcefulness from those days in plumbing that I take even into my life today in my career. Is being very resourceful, and those are the roots of that resourcefulness.
I think you brought up a very interesting point there. And as far as like career advice goes, those that can be resourceful and take stuff and make it work in a way that it isn't meant to work, maybe in order to facilitate something, it is very important in problem solving across various industries. I think one of the most famous examples of that would be Apollo 13. If the folks up there didn't have that skill, they wouldn't have made it back, because they had to bring in different air scrubbers, like from the LEM to the command module. And of course they were built by two different folks. So they square hole, round peg, they had to use duct tape and all that stuff, but they got it working. And there's a lot to be said with regards both to for IT and also for cybersecurity, as far as being that resourcefulness to be able to understand what you can do in order to make things work or make things not work in some ways, I guess.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's and you see it every day in your job. I mean, we're always having to problem solve, especially in cyber. It's such a tough industry because you think you have something solved, and then there's another hole, right? It's you know, trying to go from place to place. And so being able to be resourceful and problem solve, and I'm glad that they had that example of being resourceful, because that would have been a tragedy, right? If they weren't able to get back. But that is such a great example of being resourceful. And if you're in the cyber world, you definitely have to be resourceful, especially with AI and everything that's happening now. Everything is accelerating so quickly. You just really have to have that skill set to be in cyber. And be resourceful to be able to handle the challenges that we have every day.
Well, you briefly touched on small businesses risk or SMB risk when we were talking a little bit about passwords a couple minutes ago. That coupled with the ever-changing environment, certainly SMBs are facing a lot of the same risks that larger institutions face, but also they don't have necessarily the resources or the resourcefulness that we were just talking about to be able to do those sorts of things. So from your perspective, what are one or a couple of the most significant cybersecurity threats to small and mid-sized businesses today?
Well, in my case, you know, I'm involved in a nonprofit. So I helped actually start a nonprofit that serves people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. It's a faith-based organization. We started with really nothing, $1,000 and an idea that we could serve a population that when they age out of the school system, they have a place to go, and gives them a place of hope and for them to live their life to their fullest potential.
Wow.
And so that was our goal. And so, you know, fast forward to now, that started in 2012. We own 22 acres of property. We have a 5,000 square foot community center, but we grew so fast and we accelerated growth. So we got to a point about 2016, we started serving about 10 or so per week. Now we serve about 70 or so per week, and we just received $1.8 million to actually double the size of our community center. So the explosive growth and the rapid growth of this small business, you know, created technology challenges. I mean, we just were buying computers here and there for, you know, different employees, but we had no standards. We didn't have the resources to pay for an IT, you know, person to work full time. And so it really caused some issues. We have a lot of information. We collect information for our the members that we call them members that are part of our organization, because we need to understand what health challenges they have. So we have to collect some of that health information, which, you know, makes us have to become HIPAA compliant. Mm-hmm. And so there's HIPAA, you know, especially in small business, that anybody that serves patients is collecting that kind of information. That's a challenge. The lack of funding to hire someone, the lack of administration, you know, we were just kind of piece parting it together for a while. And so I had to come back and give some structure to it and actually build a system. We actually went out and hired a contractor a partner to actually manage all of our IT, because, you know, now we're up to 14 computers and we're getting ready to double in size over the next year and a half. So we needed to have someone to be able to administer the network, the security of the network. I do a lot of the actual cyber awareness training. So that's another thing as well. Small business is an easy target. Most people are running day-to-day operations and running very fast and very lean. Mm-hmm. But, you know, being a target for some type of a scam or a phishing attack of some sort. And we did have an employee that, you know, that had a challenge from an AI attack, and it was an AI voice attack. They received a phone call saying that their daughter was kidnapped. And they heard her voice, and her voice actually was on the line, and the family verified that it was the daughter's voice. The good thing in this case, it was a great outcome, because her daughter was working at a restaurant that was only about 5 minutes away. So they were able to go down and verify that she was okay. But those type of challenges for a small business are very challenging, because they don't have the staff and they don't have the funding. And we had to do outreach and get people to volunteer their time. And I volunteer my time as well to help from a nonprofit perspective. But again, small businesses are challenged because they don't have the time. They're running very lean, and it's very difficult to manage, especially with social engineering attacks, because 80 plus, you know, the numbers even higher, originate from a social engineering attack. Right. So, and I see that as the biggest challenge, is having some type of system education, and having the, you know, the awareness that these type of attacks are happening every day, because it's so easy just to click on something and not think about it. I always try to teach, stop and think.
Right. Well, you touched on something that I don't think that I've heard or considered. And now this is number 142, as far as the number of conversations I've had here on the podcast, that something that SMBs don't consider, or maybe should consider, so is the risk associated with explosive growth. And because you mentioned that you just got a $1.8 million grant, you're going to be doubling in size. And that is really what any SMB wants to do for the most part. I mean, there are some businesses, I had to add for the most part, because my small business, I'm at the point where I like it where it's at. I'm not looking at explosive mm-hmm. growth, but a lot of businesses, for the most part, they like to expand, and that's part of their strategic plan. But they rarely consider information security in their strategic plan with regards to growth. partially because they don't even consider information security that much in their plan to begin with. So I think you brought out something that is very relevant there. But when you have an organization, I mean, the one that you're working for is blessed because they have you as part of the as one of the founders, and you've been involved with it for over a decade, and you bring your wealth of IT and information security and cybersecurity knowledge to it. What would you recommend for some businesses that are facing that risk that you were referring to with regards to not having that resource, not having what can they do?
Well, it's you really need to kind of, you know, survey it. A lot of times that you've got people that have one or two computers but even you need to have someone come in and do some type of analysis, an assessment to understand, you know, what you have, what is your area of risk, right? And do an assessment to make recommendations. Mm-hmm. And that's what we did too. In addition to myself, sometimes I like to bring in a third party to take a look at, you know, maybe there's gaps that I don't even see as well. Now we have to have an assessment because of HIPAA, but you know, from a small business that's, you know, kind of running lean, they still can do an outreach to someone local, a consultant, or, you know, even any type of consulting firm that handles cyber, and they will help with those services to do an evaluation. And I think that's the key. When people ask me this question, I've been asked this before, is I'm going to do an outreach to find someone to come in and do just a security posture assessment to understand what I currently have. Because a lot of times I have no idea. I'm buying computers willy-nilly. I'm buying one or two, three, four, five, and I have no semblance of security. I don't even know what antivirus I have on my system. So it's always good to get an outside person to come in and help evaluate, you know, where you're at, what are your risks, what is the data that you're storing, and all those things, because we don't think about that as small business owners because we're running our day-to-day operation and where we have our competency. It's better to hire an outside firm to come in and take a look at your security posture and make recommendations from there.
Well, yeah, because you take away the, or you bring objectivity rather to it. There's always that incentive that's gets to the point also about the age old debate about where should the CISO report to. The CISO shouldn't report to the CIO because you have potential conflict of interest there because you're not quite objective. And usually bringing in a third party is a good way to do that. And there's a lot of, I mean, you don't necessarily have to bring in a big firm that's going to charge you six figures to do a multifaceted audit. I mean, there are other alternatives out there, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, there are many opportunities, but I would say, you know, for smaller business, it's not necessarily, you know, too expensive. It's the a lot of times the risk, you kind of have to understand what the risk is and if it outweighs the cost. But a lot of times you can hire someone, it's a fairly inexpensive opportunity to have them come in and do an evaluation and a posture assessment, but you don't have to hire a big firm and I won't name the big guys, but you know, you don't have to hire a big firm to come in and do this. There are local folks and organizations, even like yourself, Greg, that offer services that could come in and do it and understand really what the challenges are and provide you a report and remediation services and all those things. Fairly inexpensive. It's not going to break the bank, and it's going to help you reduce those risks that could cost you a lot more money in the long run.
And a great place to look for that in your local area would be your Chamber of Commerce. A lot of organizations are there, and you can definitely connect and network through there and find that. Now, I wanted to ask one other question, too, because you brought up, you know, we talked about the changing threat environment. You brought up the deep fake of the voice on the call, the daughter. And fortunately, that was easy to check because the daughter was working at a restaurant 5 minutes away. But that's not going to be the case for most people. And I have not, and I'm not saying this for anyone to, I'm not putting down a challenge or anything, but I have not experienced that myself yet where I've gotten a call faking a loved one's voice in that manner. But for those that can't go 5 minutes away to physically verify that the person is okay, what can they do? Do you have any recommendations?
Actually, I do. I would say the best thing to do is come up with a family password. Mm-hmm. And so when I say that, you could come up with some type of keyword or a safe word, whatever you want to call it, So that way, if someone calls you, it sounds like your daughter. And I have other examples of the same thing happening with grandparents and things. My recommendation is always create a safe word, whatever that word is that only you know, and share that with your family and practice it as well. So that way it's embedded in your mind to say, hey, if I get a call and it sounds like my granddaughter, I'm going to ask her, hey, could you give me the safe word? Or somebody calls and says, I've captured your granddaughter. I'm going to say, well, tell me the keyword or the safe word. And if they can't produce that, then I'm going to know that and most of the time it's going to be a fake because of that reason, because if they can't produce the word now, that was the number one recommendation that I have. And that's what I give people out of this example as well, to help mitigate those type of attacks.
I think that's a great recommendation. There are other things that you can do. I, as you were talking about that, I was thinking that's probably one of the best what I would do. But I was thinking about, in my particular case, the first thing I would do, I would ask my wife for a safe word. But let's just say that it's something that is easily guessed, or let's just say that they were able to guess it. But one other thing I guess you can do is that if you enable the tracking, if you will, on for the iPhone, it's the Find Me. You can have, well, I guess I should have shown it because I have a Slack message on there. I have to edit that out. security. But like I can always check to see, it's like, well, okay, this person says that they've kidnapped my wife, but I see that she's still at work. So chances are, you know, that's going to be the case as well. The point being, I think, with all of this is that pre-planning with regards to any risk, if you can plan it in advance, what you're going to do, you have a much better chance of not being exploited by whatever that vulnerability is and whatever that the criminal is trying to do.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. And that is the secondary recommendation, is use the tracking mechanism so you do know. So that was a great point you brought up. So yeah, but you're right.
Your luck.
It is about the pre-planning. It's about practicing it. It's like, you know, business continuity, disaster recovery, right? You want to practice the plan because you don't know when you're going to have to implement it, but you want to be able to go through the motions. So I always recommend to families, it's like, hey, you know, why don't you practice that? Have someone call and simulate it. So that way, you know, you're building that muscle memory. And then when it happens, you're ready for it.
Right. Well, a lot of this is very stressful, and it's a little bit difficult. It's a lot difficult in our industry today, with regards to all those different threats. And we're constantly, as practitioners, having to come up with different tactics and advice in order to help keep folks as secure as they can. And it can be very stressful. And plus, we're in an odd phase with regards to the job market right now. I don't know about you, but in my 35 years, I don't think I've ever seen it this bad. And I don't know. I tend to think that there's a problem of saturation, that too many people were promised too many things in a kind of a false promise type world. It's cyber and IT can be very hard. It's not all fun and glamorous, but all this layers a lot of stress on folks, and it's terribly important that you need to step away from the stress, decompress, do something. Even if you're on the job hunt as well too. And what's one of the things you do, Darren, to step away and decompress from the stresses of everything IT, information security, and cyber?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, and you're exactly right. This is a very stressful job. It wears on you, right? So you have to step away. Me, I have two avenues. One that is something that I'm passionate about, and that's leadership development and coaching. I do side projects and help people in those areas. So I love to give back and serve. And I do that through a coaching business on the side. I do it after hours and the weekends because I love it. I love helping people. I love to see people become successful in their lives and their careers. So I do that. That's a good outlet for me because I enjoy it so much and I enjoy people. But the other thing is I'm a beach person. I live in Florida. I love the beach. I spend a lot of time at the beach, and we go camping. I have a camper that we take and spend time, you know, near salt water. So if I get near salt water, that's where I love to be, you know, near the beach, on the beach, in the water. I love to, you know, surfing and all those things. And so those are my outlets.
See, now I now my wife and I tend to go down to Florida once a year. We don't have as much beachy stuff up here in the middle of Tennessee. We got a lot of cicadas though right now. We're in the middle of our 13 year brood right now, so we haven't seen these folks for 13 years. It's kind of neat, but it gets kind of old after a while. So what about your future plans? More with regards to the nonprofit and to the coaching, the leadership?
Yeah, I think, you know, I mentioned before, 35 years, I'm aging, right? So I'm looking for those opportunities. You know, I have a servant heart, right? And I feel like that's my calling. And so as I continue to move forward in my life, I love the leadership aspect, leadership development, the coaching, communications. I enjoy helping people with communications, become better public speakers. And all those things, those aspects, and I'll continue my cyber journey as well, you know, as long as I'm able to. And then my big passion is my nonprofit, right? Is to continue to grow services to serve that, you know, that community with intellectual developmental disabilities. That is, to me, that's my heart, right? That's what drives me every day to wake up. And when you go over and visit, I play Santa Claus, you know, I've done it 7 years in a row. I had to do it during COVID. I'd do it from the North Pole over Zoom, but you know, so we adapted. But it's, you know, to see those faces of those individuals who are living their purpose, right? They, when they leave school, a lot of times they lose track of their friends. They don't have that socialization. They don't have anything to challenge them. So when they come there, they get that opportunity to see the hope and them living their life to the fullest potential. That's what drives me, and I want to continue serving there as long as I can.
Great story. Great stuff. Darren, it's been a lot of fun chatting with you today. Appreciate your time joining us.
Hey, Greg, thank you so much for the opportunity. Enjoy the conversation and God bless you.
All right. And everybody, stay secure.